Well, today we want to begin focusing on Israel for the next little bit. And, of course, Israel is probably the major news story going on right now with the war in Gaza against Hamas. It's interesting that Yasser Arafat's organization, the PLO, which was ruling Gaza and the West Bank there for a few years anyway, it's interesting that they have almost no influence now. You think, you know, when you think of the Palestinian movement and you think of terrorism, you think of the name Yasser Arafat. Well, his organization has almost no influence. What has happened is the radical elements have taken over. In Lebanon, it's Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran. In the Gaza, now in the West Bank, Hamas has actually been elected by the people as the ruling party, and they are another radical terrorist organization. So the Palestinians have turned to these radical organizations, these terrorist organizations that are dedicated to the destruction of Israel. They don't want peace. As my Jewish brother-in-law likes to say, he says, yeah, the Hamas wants peace. They want Israel one piece at a time. And that's about the size of it. They don't want peace. They want the destruction of Israel, and they want the land. And so you see it, what you see today, in spite of what the news media is saying, in spite of all the condemnation, now the UN Security Council, we either had to abstain or vote for it, one or the other, because the United States is one of the five permanent members of the Security Council. We can veto anything that comes out of there. And historically, our country has vetoed anti-Israel Security Council resolutions. But either we abstained and did nothing, or we voted for it. On this one, a Security Council resolution just in the last couple of days condemning Israel. Now, let me tell you, all Israel's doing is defending itself. That's all it's doing. It's pure self-defense. And there's a time, you know, when somebody, when you go to school every day and you have a bully that keeps poking a stick in your eye every day, and he keeps tripping you and knocking you down every day, and he keeps pushing you down every day, there comes a point in time where it's time to take the bully out back and beat the snot out of him and settle it once and for all. That's what Israel's doing. Hamas has been launching rockets into Israel. They have been doing suicide bombs on buses, killing Israeli civilians. And Israel has put up with it and put up with it and put up with it and put up with it in the name of peace. And now finally they've said enough. We're going to beat the snot out of you. We're going to settle this once and for all. Now that just makes good sense, folks. There's a point in time where you're not going to stop the thing unless you get rid of the bully. And that's what they're doing. The whole world's condemning them for it. But one thing we know from the Bible is that all this is part of prophecy. All this is setting up for the return of the Lord. And so keep your eye on what's going on in Israel. May 14th, 1948, one of the most pivotal days in human history. If you were to pick a lot of days that really is the turning point in human history, this would have to be in the top 10. At precisely 4 p.m. at the Cultural Center in Tel Aviv, David Ben-Gurion read the text of the United Nations General Assembly resolution that established Israel as a nation, Israel as a state there in Palestine. And what's interesting is approximately 2,700 years before Ben-Gurion's historic announcement, Isaiah said this: "Who has ever heard of such a thing? Who has ever seen such things? Can a country be born in a day, or a nation be brought forth in a moment?" Right at the very end of the book of Isaiah, chapter 66 and verse 8. Yet that's exactly what happened with Israel. The state of Israel was brought into existence again as a nation in a day with the passing of a United Nations General Assembly resolution. The story of the Bible, as we know, is the story of Israel. You can't get away from that. The Bible's a Jewish book about a Jewish Messiah that came from the Jewish people who just happens to be the Savior of the whole world and the Creator of the whole world. But think about it. Just the book of Genesis, for example. Let's forget about Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, these books that totally are about Israel. Let's think about Genesis. Only two chapters record the creation of the world. in Genesis. There's only one chapter dedicated to the fall of the human race, that story. Only eight chapters cover the thousands of years that pass from the time of creation until the time of Abram. And yet the last 38 chapters deal with the life stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the fathers of the Jewish race. Isn't that something? Two chapters devoted to creation. One chapter devoted to the fall. Eight chapters covering that thousands of years that passed after the fall to the time of Abram. And the final 38 chapters devoted to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now let's look at the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 12. Let's remind ourselves of what God promised Abraham. There isn't going to be any peace in Israel until the Abrahamic covenant is recognized. Now, that tells you what we're up against. Secular people who don't believe in God aren't going to recognize a Bible covenant with Israel. They're not going to. So you're not going to have true peace. You might have ceasefires. You might have Israel making peace with this nation or that nation like they have done with Egypt. And at least there's been much improved relations with Jordan. But you're still going to have Syria. And you're still going to have Iran. And you're still going to have Saudi Arabia. And you're still going to have the terrorist organizations. You're still going to have all this upheaval and turmoil in the land of Israel. Because you have people who do not recognize Israel's God-given right to that land through the Abrahamic covenant. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, the Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country." Of course, that word he's talking about, Ur of the Chaldees, which later became known as Babylon. "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." Now, God promises four things in this covenant to Abraham. Four, and they're unconditional promises. They're not, if you do this, this is what I'll do. Some of God's covenants in the Old Testament with Israel and various things are conditional covenants. They're conditioned on Israel doing certain things. The Abrahamic covenant is not a conditional covenant. It's an unconditional covenant. God says, without any conditions, without any strings attached, this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm making this covenant with you by my grace. Well, number one, God promised to bless Abraham. That's the first thing he promised to do in that covenant. And in spite of all of the persecution, all of the various holocausts that Israel has endured through the centuries, that promise has been lavishly kept by God. Think about it. For thousands of years, the name Abraham has been revered by Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike. Probably the most revered name, perhaps after Jesus, in the world. Secondly, and this is interesting, and I could pull out a lot of things, but I just want to give you an illustration. Abraham has also been blessed through the gifts God gave his descendants. Now, there's approximately 6 billion inhabitants in the world today. Only slightly more than 13 million of them are Jewish. That's less than 2/3 of 1% of the world's population. Yet, out of the 777 Nobel Prizes that have been awarded to this date, 176 of them have gone to Jewish people. That's 22.6% of all Nobel Peace Prizes. They comprise less than 2/3 of 1% of the population of the world, but they have claimed 22.6% of all Nobel Prizes. Look, that's quite a disproportionate number. One thing I didn't put here is that our military hardware is considered by virtually every nation to be the best there is out there. Everybody wants to buy our stuff. And for many, many years, the F-15 was considered to be the finest fighter plane in the world. Now, we've made the F-18, and there's some others we've developed and everything that have gone beyond that. But for probably 20 years, 25 years, the F-15 was considered to be the finest fighter plane in the world. Everybody wanted one. Every country wanted to own them. Well, Israel bought our F-15s, this plane that everybody thought was just the primo fighter plane, and they took it and modified it and made it better and changed the name of it to a Hebrew name, okay? And so they upgraded our F-15 and really made it perform. So when they took on the Syrians some years back in the Bekaa Valley in the air, in 1983, they shot down 90, with these modified F-15s, they shot down 96 Syrian MiGs and lost only three of their own planes. Now that's the Jews. They're brilliant. They have been the greatest businessmen, the greatest entrepreneurs, some of the greatest professors, the greatest scientist. You know, you look at the Manhattan Project. Who did you have? Teller, a Jew. Oppenheimer. You know, the develop of atomic energy and all of that. Jews that were at the key point of them. Some of them German Jews brought over from Germany after the war. But Jews nonetheless. You can go on and on and on. The banking industry has been heavily influenced through the years. The oil industry, all of it. You'll see the key positions are occupied by Jews. God has truly kept his promise to bless Abraham and his offspring. Secondly, God promised to bring out of Abram a great nation. Currently, 5.4 million Jews live in Israel, and another 5 million live in the United States, and a significant Jewish population still remains scattered in virtually every country on earth. Just about any country you go to, you're going to find there's Jews there. If you add this to all of the descendants who've ever lived through the centuries, descendants of Abraham, you know, all that have died now, you've got a huge number of descendants of Abraham, a huge nation as uncountable as the stars in the sky, as God promised Abraham. Thirdly, God promised to make Abraham a blessing to many. That promise has been spectacularly kept. Let me just point out three things that's very, very dear to us. First of all, without the Jews, we wouldn't have the Bible. Where would we be without the Bible? Secondly, without the Jews, there'd be no Jesus. And thirdly, without the Jews, there would have been no Ten Commandments, which has been the basis of all law and jurisprudence among the civilized nations of the world for centuries. That's just three things, okay? The Jews have made a tremendous impact on the whole world. Number four, God promised to bless those who bless Israel and curse those who curse her. He has kept that promise faithfully. No nation has blessed Israel like the United States of America, and no nation has been blessed by God for it like the United States of America has been blessed. But look at the other side of the coin. Throughout history, the judgments of God have fallen heavily on Israel's oppressors, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Rome, and in more modern times, Spain, Germany, and Russia. Today, as forces who are less friendly toward Israel gain power in American politics, many believe that the United States will soon be added to that second list. Not long ago, former President Jimmy Carter caused an uproar by going to Israel and meeting with Hamas, the terrorist organization, when the United States government has always had the policy that we do not negotiate with terrorists, the same policy Israel's had. Key Obama Middle East advisor Robert Malley has written various op-ed pieces in the New York Times, the Washington Post, LA Times, other papers, urging the U.S. to disengage somewhat from Israel and negotiate more with Syria, Hezbollah, and Hamas. The very first thing, within 2 days after Barack Obama was elected President of the United States, he sent Malley and others to Damascus. That was his first move as president-elect. He sent them to Damascus to meet with the Arabs and assure the Arabs they were going to get a better shake from him than they had got from George W. Bush. And so you see signs, not just with Barack Obama, but, you know, Carter is an indication, the State Department, other leaders, congressional leaders, you see signs of getting on this bandwagon of blaming Israel and tilting away from Israel. And let me tell you, if we do it, we're done as a nation. We're done as a nation. God's kept his word to bless those that bless Abraham. You better believe he'll keep his word with us to curse those that curse Abraham. Of all of God's promises to Abraham, the most amazing, and this is what I'm going to wrap up with today, the most amazing of all of them may be his promise concerning the land itself. And I want you to think about it. to this very day, whoever controls the land of Palestine is the most volatile issue in international politics. Everything else takes a back seat to the conflict in Palestine. That is the key issue. If you could solve that problem, you would solve 1,000 other problems around the world. It is the focal point. But you know, we need not worry. The rights to the promised land and who they will go to have already been determined by the one God who owns the whole world. God's already settled that, who it belongs to and who he's giving it to. Genesis 12:1, look at it. Abrahamic covenant again. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. God is the one who gave that land to Abram. Now, who's going to take it away from him if God gave it to him? Well, there's going to be people going to try. There's going to be a lot of wars, and has been a lot of wars over it. But I'm telling you, the Palestinians will not end up with that land. When it's all said and done, Israel will end up with it because God gave it to them. Look at Deuteronomy 11:11-12. But the land you are crossing to the Jordan to take possession of is a land of mountains and valleys that drinks rain from heaven. It is a land the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are continually on it from the beginning of the year to its end. God says, this is a special place I've set aside in the earth for you. And I care for it, and it's mine, I give it to you. The people of Israel today are the beneficiaries, even thousands of years later, of God's covenant with Abraham. And their deep connectedness to the land of Israel is due to that covenant. Rabbi Benjamin Elon said this. He said, I walk the streets of the promised land where Abram walked. I drive through the roads and plains where Isaac tended his flocks. I hike to the hilltops from where Jacob peered expectantly in all directions. I see these things and remember clearly the biblical truth. God gave the promised land, all of it, to our patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said this, the love of this land was due to an imperative, a command, not to an instinct, not to a sentiment. There is a covenant, an engagement of the people to the land. We live by covenants. We could not betray our pledge or discard the promise. When Israel was driven into exile, the pledge became a prayer. The prayer a dream, the dream a passion, a duty, a dedication. It is a commitment we must not betray. To abandon the land would make a mockery of all our longings, prayers, and commitments. To abandon the land would be to repudiate the Bible. End of quote. That's a great statement. That's what it comes down to. And historically, because of the Judeo-Christian influence in our country, the United States has based its foreign policy toward Israel on the Christian influence in this nation and belief that it is a land that God gave Israel. But that's changing. And the reason it's changing is because we are no longer a Judeo-Christian nation. We're an atheist nation that doesn't believe in God and doesn't believe in the Bible. And as our religion changes from Christianity to atheism, so our foreign policy toward the Middle East will follow. Mark it down. Because the basis for Israel having that land is not political. It is not historical. It is theological. God gave it to them. It is theirs by divine covenant. And that's the whole basis for their possession of the land. To try and solve it politically, to try and solve it historically will not work. Because the Palestinians could say, well, we've been here thousands of years too. The Palestinians come from the Philistines, and you know what the Old Testament thought of them. If Israel would have done the job they were supposed to, the Palestinians wouldn't exist today because Israel would have wiped out the Philistines. Okay? The Philistines were a coast-dwelling people. The Gaza Strip, Ashkelon, Gaza, Gath, Ekron, all those cities up and down the Gaza Strip. Those are all Philistine cities in the Old Testament. When the Ark of the Covenant was taken in battle under the time of Eli the high priest and his wicked sons, Hophni and Phinehas, who were priests, And they took the ark out of the Holy of Holies and led it in battle like an idol. They treated it like an idol. That they're taking their god, this box, and leading Israel out against the Philistines. And over 20,000 or 30,000 were killed that day, including Hophni and Phinehas, and the ark of God was captured. And the Philistines put the ark of God in the temple of Dagon, their god, because their god had beaten Israel's god. Of course, you know the story. They came out every morning and Dagon, the idol Dagon, was on his face before the Ark of the Covenant, worshiping God. Finally, the arms and the head were cut off of Dagon, and just a stump was there. And then God smote the men of the city with tumors. And they made the connection, boy, things have been going wrong ever since we brought this Israelite God here. And so they started sending him up the line to all of these cities, to Ekron, to Ashdod, to Gath. All these cities of the Gaza Strip. That's where the Palestinians are today. Philistine land, coast dwellers, because they came in from the sea. Okay? And every place God smote the men of the city with tumors. You know, there wasn't a political solution devised. It's an amazing thing when you read this story in the early pages of 1 Samuel. There wasn't a political solution devised. It might be 2 Samuel, is it? No, it's 1 Samuel. There was a political solution devised. They didn't say, we need to negotiate with Israel. You know what it says after about the fourth city where God smote the Philistines with tumors for possessing the Ark of the Covenant? It says even these raw pagans who didn't even know God, it says the cry of the city went up to heaven. There's your solution. Theological. That's the only thing that's going to solve that problem. The cry of the city went up to heaven, and even these pagans figured out, we better take this thing that represents Israel's God, give it back to Israel, and get it out of here, or we're all going to be killed. Theological. The cry of the city went up to heaven. It's no accident that the scriptures admonish Christians to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, because it's not going to come through negotiation. It's not going to come through political solutions. It's not going to come through the United Nations. It's going to come through prayer. It's going to come through a theological solution. Let me show you what that theological solution is. The issue that has to be faced by anyone serious about a Middle East solution: the land was given by God to Abraham and his descendants as an everlasting possession. It can't be taken away. Genesis 17:7. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. So how's the Middle Eastern problem going to be solved? This way. There will be no true solution. There will be a fake one that the Antichrist will bring for the first half of the tribulation. But there will be no true solution to the Middle East crisis until Jesus Christ, the Messiah of Israel and the world, returns from heaven to assume the throne of Israel as the son of David, ushering in the promised 1,000-year Davidic millennial kingdom. At that time, the Bible says, all of Israel and God's enemies will be placed under Jesus' feet. They'll be defeated. They'll be purged out of the land. All of Israel's and God's enemies will be placed under the Messiah's feet as he returns to the promised land as the king of Israel and the world. And he will reign over the whole earth from his throne in Jerusalem. That's how it's going to be solved. It's going to be solved theologically when Jesus Christ comes as the rightful king of Israel and assumes his throne and does away with all of Israel's enemies. There's a lot of theological systems today. Covenant theology in the Reform camp. Other systems that do not recognize what we've talked about today. They say all Israel is an Old Testament picture of the church, and so the church is spiritual Israel. All this stuff about the land and everything else, that was all temporary, those covenants, even though God says it's everlasting and unconditional. And I'll tell you something. I've shown you from the scriptures, but just from personal experience. In 1985, when we traveled to the Middle East, my wife and I with a group, we were supposed to go to Greece first and visit Athens and visit Corinth and all of that, which would have been wonderful. But right before we were to leave, just a matter of 3-4 months, the Achille Laurel was hijacked and Leon Klinghoffer was murdered. and a TWA jet was hijacked out of Athens. There were a lot of hijackings originating in Athens, and that's the one where they finally ended up landing in Beirut, and they took the hostages off the plane and had them scattered around Lebanon for 40 days. And it was just a difficult, difficult time. Many hijackings originating in Athens. And so people who are on our tour group were contacting the tour agency saying, we're concerned about going through Athens. We're a little bit nervous. The security doesn't seem to be very good there. And, you know, Klinghoffer, an American, had just been killed, an American Jew. And so they gave the option. They said, you can still go to Athens if you want, but we have a different option. For an additional $75, you can go through Switzerland. Go to Switzerland for 4 days, and then the two groups will meet in Tel Aviv, in Israel. Well, my wife and I looked at each other, and it took us about 2 seconds to make that choice. We're going to Switzerland. Now, if you've ever heard about Switzerland, Switzerland's like fantasy land. I mean, it's not like a regular country. It's like some artist just painted the whole place. I mean, it's just, you can't believe it. It is just, you feel like you're in a storybook the whole time you're there. It is such an unbelievable, I mean, everything is just so manicured, every blade of grass. I mean, the Alps are just so beautiful. And so we're just like walking around with our mouths hanging open the whole time we're there. And we started thinking the same thing. We thought, this has been so fantastic, Israel's going to be a letdown. Because we were picturing, you know, just desert and burned over desert and all that. We thought after Switzerland, Israel's going to be a letdown. It wasn't. We flew into Tel Aviv at night. And I want to tell you something. It was amazing. We assembled, took the bus to the hotel. Dark, couldn't see anything. But got, you know, no sightseeing begun yet. But as we sat in that hotel as a group in the land of Israel, I'm telling you, everybody started looking at each other and saying the same thing. You could feel the presence of the Holy Spirit in that land. It was unbelievable. It was just like, wow, this is Israel. And you could sense that you were in a special place and God was there in a special way. That's because of the Abrahamic covenant. And you know what? When God gives his word, nobody can change it. Israel's going to go through the meat grinder, particularly at the hand of the Antichrist. But in the end, the land is theirs because God said so. And nobody can take it away.